Disney, alright, Disney's pulling back.
Disney's pulling back?
No, no, it's pulling back its offerings from DSTV and the other satellite TV services.
Okay, and that's a great way...
It's a bit of a mess there. Mm.
Yeah, and that's a great way to start episode 139 of the Overclock ZA podcast, South Africa's most accessible consumer technology podcast. I am Lindsay Shooters, your host on this. We didn't do anything last week because we did a lot.
Too busy doing things.
We did a lot. We were shouting at each other at one stage.
Yes, we were. We were. It was quite bitter and acrimonious.
Because Gavin was trying to teach me, someone who actually buys phones, how to buy a phone. I'm joined as always. I'm Lindsay Shooters, Sharpshooters on social media, mostly on Twitter. That's S-C-H-U-T-T-E-R-S. That's how you spell the Shooters, but Sharp is Sharp. And I'm joined as always by the editor of the continent's largest consumer technology publication, Tech Magazine, Gavin Dudley. Gavin Dudley, and you tried to school me on how to buy a cell phone.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew it was a sensitive
issue.
There you go. I mean, I knew it was going to be a sensitive issue going forward, but I just felt like I had a lot to say on the subject. So I'm sorry if I kind of ended up blindsiding you and irking you.
Anyway, but then the edit took so long and life got in the way. And now you're at episode 139. Thank you for joining us. Disney is pulling back, you were saying, Gavin.
Yeah. So, I mean, Disney, I mean, for people who aren't following this closely, it is actually extraordinary, A, how well the Disney company has done, and B, what intellectual properties and brands and franchises it owns now. Marvel, Star Wars, just for openers. And then there's like a screed of others. And they launched their streaming service. We discussed it on the pod probably like almost a year ago, I think. But they didn't launch it in South Africa. Now they're promising us it's coming next year. But as a result, they're starting to claw back their products from DSTV and other streaming services who have been running the Marvel stuff and the Star Wars stuff and so on. So they're going to pull all that back, and you'll only be able to get it by subscribing to the Disney streaming channel, which, as I say, might come next year. It's become so messy, the streaming business, because I suppose it would be like getting cable in the US, where if you wanted all the shows, you had to, you know, have HBO and this one and that one. We're basically now in the same boat. If you want Game of Thrones and Marvel and this, you have to subscribe to multiple services. And that's okay. I'm making my peace with that. It's just, it's the cost of living in the 21st century, I suppose.
Mm. How much do you think, I know we've done this before, how much do you think, ballpark figure, how much are you spending on streaming right now?
Right now?
All told.
400 and something.
400 and something.
Yeah, so that's Amazon, Netflix, YouTube.
Which Netflix package are you on?
The top one.
The top one, yeah. Amazon, the top one.
Mainly because we have like two kids also want to watch their own stuff, so we have to have the four thing. The four user thing. Let's see, who else have I got? Oh gosh,
Showmax.
BritBox, Showmax.
What are you watching on BritBox? I've heard good things.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to be into that sort of British kind of television
like
concept,
which is just so vastly different. What is the one thing that you're paying for?
Right now, we are watching Prime Suspect, which has I think 7 seasons. Each series has got 2 episodes, 2 long hour-long type episodes with Helen Mirren. Really excellent, excellent stuff. Done in a very British way. But Prime Suspect is really old. I mean, it's set in like the early 90s. That's, I think, when they actually made it was like the mid-90s. Mm. And it's basically the British version of The Wire. So got really into that. For those who've never watched The Wire kind of set a high water mark for gritty TV in the early 90s. And you do yourself a favor to go and watch that stuff. Mm. That's The Wire. So, BritBox, I mean, I might watch some Blackadder. I might watch a few other things.
Blackadder! Taking it back.
Way back.
Yeah.
BritBox, it's got something to offer. It's about $100. I think you get a month or two free. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
No, a week. I think it's actually only a week.
I didn't look
free.
Into it. We stole Showmax, Netflix. We'll definitely get Disney Plus when it is available.
YouTube Premium.
YouTube Premium, definitely. I don't even consider my YouTube Premium
a tax. It's like having MS Word. You know, you kind of just got to have it. So YouTube Premium, for those who don't know, stops all the bloody ads from running on YouTube. You'd be amazed how annoying the ads are on YouTube. Once you've eliminated them by upgrading to YouTube Premium, when the ads appear, they're just so annoying, you know, occasionally on somebody else's YouTube, you know. Oh,
so now the problem that I have is they're introducing a new tier where you can just get ad-free YouTube. and not the YouTube Music.
Oh, okay.
Which would make perfect sense in my world because I have Apple Music.
Yes.
But my Google Home speaker
really likes YouTube Music.
Yes. And refuses to like do a lot of other things.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube Music was like just another service that got added on after all the Prime listening services had already launched. Along came YouTube Music. It's bundled into your YouTube Premium subscription. For those who don't currently have a music streaming service, you could get the YouTube Premium and have the YouTube Music bundled in. But I've never used it for anything, so, you know.
Okay, UK is investigating the NVIDIA purchase of ARM.
Yeah, no, for me, this is possibly the single biggest story of the decade, potentially, in my opinion, when NVIDIA put in a bid to purchase ARM. ARM is the architecture on which the vast majority of today's microchips are based. So by NVIDIA laying claim to ARM, all that intellectual property will be corralled in the US together with Intel and AMD, the three biggest chip makers in the world. All the IP for all that would all be in America, which gives them control of the digital market, in my opinion, and in that sense, control of human destiny, no less than that.
That sounds like, I think I'm going to put an ick on destiny.
But it is. I mean, you can actually hold the world to ransom if you own the intellectual property on all these microchips. And, you know, I think for that reason, the UK has been examining the details of the deal. There are concerns about anti-competitive practice if the IP for ARM ends up going to America. NVIDIA, best known for their graphics cards, are just probably the superior tech company in the world right now, have been for the last few years. Their processor development has been second to none. And as you all know, they are heavily used in the cryptography or in the cryptocurrency mining business as well. So
Yes. They've
been on a tear for the last 2 years or so, which is how they can put in a bid for how much did they bid?
€34.1 billion.
Okay, 34.1 billion euros. Okay, that's what they're paying for ARM. That's the kind of money these guys are throwing around. So you can understand that the British Anti-Competitive Commission, whatever they're called, are investigating the details, and they have not let the deal go through. They're moving into phase two of the investigation now to see if this is going to go through or not. We'll see.
I don't know. I think it makes sense. For me, I like this deal because NVIDIA are leading the charge now when it comes to AI. Just the hardware that powers AI in the data centers. And if they have access to the core development process as well, that design process, I think it will just yield so much benefits for the AI industry.
So AI, as we know, is like a massively mushrooming industry. AI is affecting your everyday life, whether you realize it at the moment or not.
That's artificial intelligence.
Whether you creeped out by it or not, it's there. It's busy running parts of your life without you even knowing it. Our best bet is to make friends with it before it takes over. That's what I think.
Yeah. And NVIDIA are the best at making those chips and processors and all those things and stuffing it in Google's. So although Google does have their own designs, which is called their Tensor processors, which is
That not based on an ARM design?
It is based on an ARM
design. Everything's based on an ARM design. So Samsung makes its own chips, a whole range of them.
Huawei also made its own chips,
a whole range.
Well,
that's the thing. If it's based on ARM architecture, then, you know, they started off with a blueprint and tweaked it, basically.
Yes.
So if NVIDIA has control of all that intellectual property, they could actually, I mean, they say they won't, but technically they could squeeze Samsung, Huawei, and everybody else who's building their own microchips, including Apple for that matter. They could squeeze them in an anti-competitive way, which is the concern here.
Talking about Samsung Pay just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better. Even if Samsung itself is trying to limit its ability on its premium hardware devices by removing features. Now there are vaccine. Where do you stand on vaccine passports, Kevin?
I'm all for vaccine passports. I mean, I understand everyone's concerns about civil liberties and so on, but I just think at a practical level, the only way forward is something like a vaccine passport. It wouldn't be nearly as necessary if so many people weren't insisting on holding out against the vaccine, in my opinion.
Yeah, so
how does Samsung Pay work roughly with the thing? I think I think all Samsung Pay does is stores a digital certified version of your COVID passport vaccination thing on the phone inside Samsung Pay.
So on Discovery right now, you can, if you're a Discovery member, you've done your vaccine through their system, there should be a record, a digital card of sorts. It's very, the updating is very strange. It shows me as being one vaccine. Still need to go for my second shot. But other people are like fully vaccinated and they're not being reflected as
I'm one of those. Yeah.
So there is that ability right now. But Samsung will just then, almost like you're putting your loyalty card into Samsung Pay, which you can.
Yeah.
Or like your MyCity Bus card.
Yes.
Which is amazing. But yeah, I just like, I like this idea. I like the idea of tech companies actually getting behind this kind of thing and making it convenient for us.
If it's secure enough for your banking transactions, it's definitely secure enough for your COVID passport. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as banking goes, I think it's one of the most secure methods right now.
Sure. Sure.
If I'm not mistaken, because there's a lot of like cryptography that goes on in the background and like your card number never gets really disclosed or anything.
And yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's one thing if you use the Standard Bank app and you do transactions. Standard Bank has then, you know, fully secured the entire pipeline for the transaction. As soon as you're an outside party, a third party like Samsung, you've got to do huge amounts of diligence to convince Standard Bank and Absa and Nedbank and MasterCard and everybody else that, you know, their stuff will be fine if they run it through Samsung Pay. So huge amounts of diligence goes into making sure that stuff is highly secure.
It actually works in conflict with Google Pay. So like the everything in Android that activates like Google Pay, Samsung Pay actually works in conflict with that, as I found out on the
So if you try and buy an app through the Google Play Store, what?
No. I'm talking about like the tap to pay kind of feature that the banking APIs are tapping into now.
Okay.
That allows you to tap to pay. Like Samsung, in their app, they do that.
Okay. You're such a Samsung Pay fanboy.
I was.
I promise you, as soon as I can get my second card to tap, I'm out of here, man. I'm none of this tap with your phone business. I'm just going to like tap with my card. Thank you very much. Okay, what else you got for us?
Talking about that, Gavin, so those sorts of features can tie you into kind of ecosystems, keep you on the upgrade cycle.
Yep.
But what is this ecological rating for phones?
Yeah, so I got this from Vodacom, and it's kind of strange. Let me start off by saying that I feel that the Vodacom missive on this was really based on what Vodafone in the UK is doing. So I don't know if Vodacom South Africa by itself would have arrived at this point. But the point is that they are now creating an ecological impact score, which will be attached to every handset. So, you know, it's measured on, I think, 19 different metrics, including how easy it is to fix the phone, how easy it is to dispose of it, whether it's made of recycled materials. There are whole criteria for how long it lasts, all this kind of thing. And they put all that together. It's a very strict criteria and very complex, and you come out with a score. I think it's a score out of 100 for how ecologically friendly your phone is. Have they used rare earth minerals? Have children been used to mine those minerals? All these things end up coming into the score. So there will be an ecological impact score for every handset that Vodacom is distributing. And that's just as part of an alliance with a whole lot of European cellular companies who have, I think, maybe trying to be proactive about the sort of thing before the EU foists something off on them and forces them to do it this way or that way. They've developed their own system for demonstrating ecological impact of phones, and in that way conscientizing the user about, you know, just how good or bad this phone is in ecological terms. So I think that's a very big step forward. You can find out about that probably on the Vodacom website, but I also have a URL for you. Yeah, you can check out ecoratingdevices.com. That's the global thing where they explain what's being measured and how and what it all means. Ecoratingdevices.com. Go check it out and know that Vodacom is a part of that. I would really like to see MTN and others, even the computer companies, getting on board with something like that, frankly.
But is that going to stop people from buying new phones all the time?
This is the problem, man. You know, in South Africa, unfortunately, the phone is not just a tool. The phone is like a status symbol. There are people driving much bigger cars than they need, you know, much more expensive cars than they need, because many of them for reasons that are not particularly good reasons, in my opinion. And the same with phones, you see. So phones are a status symbol. People want the most expensive phone they can afford so that other people will see them using it. And that normally entails them upgrading the phone all the time. And that's just not good for the planet, full stop. You know, what you want is phones that last longer. That's much more economically smart for you in the first place, and much better for the planet in the second place. And you can't fault Apple on that score, frankly. Apple stuff lasts much longer than anyone else's stuff, and that's what makes it ecologically very cool. That's in Apple's favor. What's a downside for many Apple products is that they won't allow third parties to fix the stuff. So when you need stuff repaired, Apple has to do the repair, and it will easily cost you 4 or 5 times what it would cost for any other
brand.
That
is changing now. It has changed quite a bit.
Under pressure, it's now forced to allow other people to do the repairs, but it's a heavily regulated process. So Apple wants to be sure that they can do it to the same level as Apple engineers would in fixing your products. We'll see how that plays out in Africa. I have my doubts.
Yeah, sadly, the folding phones are even worse.
Yeah, true.
Right now.
Ecological disaster. But fortunately, no one's buying them for 40,000 Rand, so that's okay.
But they're being sold and marketed, which uses up all sorts of other resources, which is a big problem. And this brings us to a more respectful conversation about buying.
You wanna talk phones? You wanna talk buying phones?
Let's talk buying phones.
Okay, you can go first this time.
So my thing is, you need to buy what you need, and you need to buy within a tier that you can afford, and you buy the best that you can afford.
Why do you do that? What is the best? When you say you buy the best you can afford, what do you mean?
The best that you can afford. I mean, if you're looking at feature set, if you're looking at reviews, if you're looking at battery life, camera, screen. All those things. But for me, it's all about how the phone works, really. So I have this thing of... It's a consultative process. if anybody asks me, like, oh, what phone should I get? It's like, how much are you willing to spend?
Yes.
If you up to...
That's a good answer. Start with what is realistic for you to pay. Yeah.
Okay. So I've worked out in my mind, there's pretty much four price categories. There's 4,000 Rand and under.
Agreed.
There's 8,000 Rand and under.
Yes, agreed.
Then you can go up to 12,000 Rand, like 12,000, 13,000 Rand.
Right.
And then there's everything else.
Yes, okay.
When you're stepping over 14,000 Rand, that's...
Yeah, at that point, you no longer need our advice because you just want what you want at that point. So, okay, so below 5,000 Rand, I'm agreeing with you. I'm calling those entry-level devices. Between 5 and 8, I'm calling... budget phones, which is where I like to play, where I prefer to play. Between 8 and 12, I'm talking mid-range phones is what I'm calling it.
Yeah.
And then above that is flagship stuff. And, you know, you're paying top dollar for top product.
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm quite smitten by the
Xiaomi
Samsung A22 at the bottom.
Interesting. End. Okay. That's about, a 2,000 Rand phone?
That's 3,500.
Okay.
Rand.
All right. Good.
So it's in that sweet spot. It's going up against like a slew of Nokias.
Yep.
Down there. There's a couple of Y series, Vivos. There's like a whole bunch of stuff down there. But I mean, the camera is good enough.
Yeah. That's what you're going for. Good enough.
The screen is better than what I've experienced at that point.
Mm.
There's no element resistance. There's no water resistance.
Yeah, very rare below 5,000 Rand. Yeah.
And it's running Samsung's, One UI 3.0, which makes it work like any other Samsung. If you look at that and you look at an S21, it looks the same.
Yep.
It runs,
yep.
It works the same. It just does the things a little bit slower.
That's been, I think, a little bugbear for Samsung, is that their low-end phones look exactly like the high-end phones. And in some respects, sometimes you think it's intentional so that, you know, people can get hooked on the Samsung brand. They can pose with their cheap-end phone looking like a high-end phone, but it's all Samsung, and so it's all good. You know, it would be like buying a B-series Mercedes or something. It's still a Mercedes, you know?
Yeah. That 6,000 Rand thing, I'm going to stretch it a little bit to include that Note 10, that Redmi, the Xiaomi Redmi Note 10 Pro.
This is our favorite budget phone of the moment.
It has its drawbacks. Like, the camera is far better than what you would expect at that price point. But when the lights go down, it becomes less great.
Yeah, it's not a flagship phone. Unfortunately, Lindsay's experience has been heavily tainted by his love of flagship phones. But I can. Did you sense him warming up to the budget phones, listeners? I do. I sense him warming up.
I'm currently using two-year-old flagships. I'm currently using, and this has changed my perception of the market quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this has even further entrenched me on the Apple side. If you're spending above 10,000 rand for a phone,
right,
is that I'm on an iPhone 8, which functions like a modern iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Today, 4 years after it has launched.
I think you're stretching that a bit there. How much storage have you got? Just tell me. 64, probably?
64 gigs. Oh. But dude, I have... What? No, let's not start this again.
Okay. Yeah, I'm being naffy. Okay.
Importantly for me, I have cloud storage that I offload a whole lot of stuff to.
Which the vast majority of people don't really know how to work it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they should learn.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, 64 gigabytes of storage is more than enough for...
It really should be. It should only be your apps that need to be in there. All your media should be stored elsewhere. Of course, there's no removable storage on Apple phones, but, you know, could be in the cloud.
Yes, should be in the cloud. File management is a chore on iOS. It is an absolute chore.
But now let's take this from the perspective of the listener who's now walking into the store to upgrade or to get their new phone. We haven't really helped them much in choosing. So they have to figure out if they're in the entry-level category below 5,000, if they're in the budget category between 5 and 8, which is where we recommend you shop because it gives you some headroom to grow into your phone, or if you're around the 10,000 rand mark, a little bit above, a little bit below, which would be what we call mid-range.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably starting at the top end of like 8,000 rand.
Yes, okay.
And moving into flagship territory.
Okay, so let's talk about our favorite phones. Okay, so why don't you just give the listeners two phones in the entry category? You like your Samsung, yeah?
Yeah, the Samsung A22.
Okay, let me give up one. I will go with the Nokia 2.4, if you can find it. It's getting harder to find because it's been replaced by other models. But the Nokia 2.4 was my entry-level hero phone.
Yeah, okay. Avoid the Nokia G10.
Yes, I'm afraid so. Sorry to say, they dropped the ball a bit there. Okay, in your budget phones?
Yeah, that was the Xiaomi Redmi Note 10 Pro.
Right, yes, I would concur on that. There's only one big winner there. The Xiaomi Redmi Note 10. There's a couple of different variants. The one we like the most is called the Pro, but there is also one with 5G if you decide you really have to have 5G. I would put into that budget category the Huawei P Smart 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was an excellent, excellent phone. Of course, we all know the limitations at this stage of Huawei phones, but as phones go, it was a fabulous phone. Also, the P40 Lite, which is now over a year old, took the best pictures of any budget phone I've ever used.
And the Oppo A74, which is another 5G entrant in that.
Now, the Oppo A72 that came just before, it really rocked my boat. It shot to the top of my rankings in the sort of middling category. And the 74 doesn't improve much on the 72, but the 72 was fabulously good. So there wasn't a whole lot to fix. So Oppo A74, you can get now with 5G is the one I reviewed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now stepping into 12,000 Rand and above, I'm just going to say this outright.
Yes.
There are fewer and fewer reasons to not buy an iPhone.
I couldn't suppress my laughter. Okay, I know I'm trying to not start a fight, man, but
because
don't come with those kind of provocative statements.
As phones go, the camera quality is excellent.
Sure, I will not dispute. The camera quality is excellent. Well, let's just say
the battery
it's
endurance,
at least as good as every other phone in that price range, probably marginally better.
Mm-hmm. The battery endurance is on par with everything.
But now you're probably talking about the SE now. What are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about 12,000. So this is you getting into iPhone 12
but
right
the
now.
The mini is 12,000, right? Because the regular iPhone is 15, right?
It's 14.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, okay. If you're an iPhone person and you don't have a lot of money, so you're not going to buy a top-end iPhone, which is the iPhone to get?
That's a lot.
iPhone 12.
Just the boom. Entry point.
iPhone 12.
I'd get in on 12.
The mini, if you're a girl, maybe. Mini.
No, if you enjoy small phones.
Yeah, okay.
Just don't gender things, dude.
No, sure.
How
sure.
Difficult
it's just,
is
it? It's about hands and stuff as well, you know, the size of your hands. So,
because of physics, your battery is going to be smaller, so your battery endurance will
be. But so is your screen, so.
Yeah, you know, but you're going to get the full iPhone experience.
Can I just say that if big screen is your thing, which it probably isn't if you're in this upper category, because big screen is for people who use their phone like a computer. You know, most people who are spending over 12,000 rand have a computer and a TV and Netflix and this and that. So they don't necessarily have to use the phone as a video player.
But they like it.
Yes, but if you do, understand that iPhone screens, for all their quality, tend to be on the smaller side. So, you know, something like a 3,000 rand phone from Nokia will have a 6.2 inch screen. That is bigger than what you're getting for your 12,000 rand Apple. So just so you understand.
Doesn't...
Okay, we're not going to turn it into a fight. It's just a fact.
I'm just saying, it doesn't make a difference. You shouldn't be buying for pure screen size.
Some people do. That's my point, is that that is what they want. That is what they need, because they commute on the train and they watch YouTube all day. I don't know, something like that. I personally not hung up on the big screen thing either, but I realize that a lot of other people are. They tend to even judge a phone's quality by the size of its screen, which is laughable, but they do.
Yeah, okay. And that's how a lot of Android manufacturers sell really poor devices to unsuspecting people.
Okay, but now we've gotten a bit off topic. So you're saying the iPhone 12 basic model is the one to have. And I would concur entirely. You're getting all the best of the new iPhone generation with none of the price bloat. So iPhone 12. So there, what's a 6.1 inch?
Yes.
Yeah, 6.1 inch screen, but superb in every way and will easily last you 2 years, probably 4 years if you're smart.
Mm. Yeah. And that's like where it comes in, where like Samsung will say, yeah, we're giving 3 years of software support.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool. Uh-huh. But when does that new version of Android like drop?
Yeah, I think very few people are motivated by that kind of
software
upgrade.
I've come around to it. I mean, like I'm on a G8S right now, the LG G8S ThinQ, which is 2 years old. It's still running Android 10. They did like a little tweak upgrade where like the volume UI is the same as it is on like Android 11 now.
Mm-hmm.
Android 11 is imminent now in the fourth quarter for this device.
I've had my first couple of phones with it launched already.
Yeah. Android 12 is also like coming out around the corner as well. So like on Android, it's a different conversation when it comes to software updates.
Okay, so now...
And everybody's kind of getting onto a good enough level.
Okay, but I feel like we have to give people more options than just an iPhone at 12 grand. What can you give people at 12 grand? I would like to put up
the Oppo Reno 5.
Oppo Reno 5 with 5G. Excellent, excellent phone. Beautifully built. Feels fantastic in hand. It's the best Oppo could do in the affordable flagship phone stakes. Nothing wrong with this phone. No corners cut. Brilliant phone. I think it's a little more than 12, though. I think it's more like 13, 14. Mm. I think it should be priced at 12, frankly, because I feel it competes directly with an iPhone 12. But, okay. So, Oppo Reno 5 with 5G. Okay.
If you have all the money to spend.
Yes.
With the Z Fold 3 and the Z Flip 3 on the table right now, I will say, if you do not want these S21 Ultra experience, get the Z Flip 3.
You think it's an S21 chopped in half and made foldable, right?
Yes. With slightly lesser cameras. The cameras are not all the way there.
Okay, but I mean, there's a subtle mental shift. I mean, to go to flip phones from candy bar phones or from, you know, flat
glass phones,
it's like a whole paradigm shift in your head.
S21 was
a... Specs, maybe, but I mean, the whole usability will be different.
S21 is a weird series for Samsung.
Mm.
Because the Ultra, the experience on the Ultra and on the vanilla S21 was so vastly, wildly different.
Well, in the sense that the Ultra should have been vastly better performance.
No, I'm talking about just the actual feature set.
But didn't it have like significantly better cameras on the Ultra, right?
Yeah, significantly better cameras, stylus support.
Right.
Like a whole bunch of things that makes it a different class of device.
Okay.
And now you have like the vanilla S21 and the S21 Plus. Which are effectively the same phone. And then the Z Flip 3 comes in, which is a S21 Plus in screen size, and it can fold in half.
Okay.
And it's water resistant.
It's quite blocky. I would have to say it's quite blocky. But again, I mean, if you want to be a real trendsetter, maybe you've got the cojones to get the first generation Samsung smart flip phone, right? Maybe you got the cojones to do that, but rest assured, I mean, I think you are going to pay some kind of penalties. I don't think you're just going to have an S21 experience in a foldable phone.
It's the same price.
Sure. Okay. I mean, I haven't seen one for so long, I can barely remember what happens around the hinge area. Is it continuous screen through the hinge, so you don't stop at the hinge?
No? Yes, it's continuous screen.
Yeah, right. Because they actually got glass that folds. They started off with a kind of a plastic that folds. Then it turned out that Huawei actually had glass that folded. And I think Samsung then surged ahead with its own folding glass. And that's why it's pushing the folding phone thing so hard. It's because it's invested huge amounts in the R&D that goes into
it. If you want the most productive phone you can get, I would not do the Z Fold 3. I would actually get
That's
the Note
problem.
20 Ultra.
Okay,
which
excellent,
is now proving to
call.
Be the last Note.
Well, I mean, here's a slightly tangential thing. So we've given you some product picks for the lower tiers. I think Lindsay will bear me out on this, that you could do very well to buy a 1 year or even 2 year old flagship phone.
Yes.
And, you know, it's stabilized, it's got all the patching done, everything's been fixed on it. And when it came out, it probably had four times more horsepower than you need, which means it will have ample horsepower for you today. And superior cameras, superior feature set in general, will do everything well. So if you've got 12 to spend, you might want to consider a year or 2 year old flagship phone, by which we mean a Samsung S20, or what else we're going to give people. We could give people a Huawei P30.
P40.
But P40 will come without the Google services. Eh?
Yeah, P30 as well. They're updating everything to Harmony OS.
Oh,
now,
I see. Okay.
Which is just...
All right. So, okay. So in the cheap flagships, we like Samsung S20. We like, if you can get an iPhone 11, I think you're styling, but you can't really get an iPhone 11 still on the market.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
In South Africa,
get an iPhone 11, you're styling. I mean, it's not that much cheaper.
You don't have 5G.
Yeah. So I guess you have to bet on whether your next phone's going to have 5G or not.
It probably should. It's a nice to have. Vodacom's building out its thing. I still think that they're lying a lot because I'm catching like 80 megabits per second with like strong 5G coverage.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know. I don't know what to make of 5G right now. I just think it's a better investment to make than high refresh rate screen.
Sure, I agree. So it's infinitely more valuable, especially over time, to people.
And I think ultra wideband is also going to become quite a thing.
Yeah, no, that's a whole separate technology we must discuss on another show. Okay, so I'm going to come in a little bit sideways here from the side with a surprise phone that I accidentally overlooked in our preamble. And this is probably the hands down safest phone you can get, best phone for the money. Great feature set, great build, great support. It is the Samsung A32, which is now available with and without 5G. And that's 5,000 Rand. I think with 5G, it's 6,000 Rand or 6.5. It is basically just the safest bet. If you don't want to be confused about brands you don't know and don't trust, you just want to stick with stuff you know, you want a good phone that's going to last a really long time, it's got a couple of high-end features, and it's just a great all-round safe phone to have, the Samsung A32 can't go wrong with that for 5,000 Rand or 6.5 with 5G.
Moving on to other things that people probably don't need but would really like. Fitbit's got a new device, Gavin. The Charge 5, we sat through the press briefing.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot in that, eh? I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to say.
Charge is their biggest selling device.
So, Charge has GPS, which is important.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the affordable tracker with GPS. Yeah, very few affordable trackers with GPS.
We didn't get local pricing yet. I see they sent out the release and then...
But what we expect, something like 4.5?
I'm feeling 4,000 Rand.
Yeah, okay.
It's got GPS. It's got a color screen now. It has all the sense features. So like the EDA, which is the electrodermal activity, which is a... interesting way to know your stress. I've actually moved back to my Ioniq because the heart rate I swapped with my wife because my wife's Alta finally gave in.
Okay.
And
wasn't she moving to Charge? No.
She was going to move to Charge, but that's a very complicated
all right
thing.
Okay.
But the Ioniq's heart rate monitor is far better.
It cannot be. It's an illusion. The Ioniq is, what, 4 years old, I think?
Yeah.
Jeez,
it's,
dude.
It's so much better than what I was getting on the
Sense.
Well,
interesting. So Lindsay was using the Fitbit Sense, which was their top model,
yes,
which cost like 8,000 rand or something like that. It was supposed to do all the all singing, all dancing,
yeah, it does like
ECG, put your fingers on the side, blah, blah, blah.
All of those things are superfluous.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
All of those features are
exactly.
superfluous.
Meanwhile, I myself have also gone backwards in the tracker world.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan and am still a big fan of the Huawei trackers, but I was using their Watch 3.
Yeah.
Is it Watch 3 or Watch 2?
Watch 2.
Watch 3 has come out, but
no,
I was
Watch
using...
Watch GT2.
Yeah, GT2. And loved this. I had two or three different ones, different generations. Loved and adored it. Then I had a major medical drama at the beginning of last year, which resulted in me stopping running. And now all I really do is like walking. I do a lot of mountain walking, walking my pets, things like that. And I discovered that GPS, not as important to me as it used to be when I was running. So to forfeit the GPS, I can go down to a much smaller device, even more battery efficient. And so I'm now using the Huawei Band 6.
Ah, awesome.
Which does everything well.
Ha, I am
and
so
has
amazing.
No GPS.
We just got the official
pricing
announcement now. It's 4,000 Rand.
Damn, okay. I had 4,500. Okay, 4,000 Rand. Well, for 4,000 Rand on the new Charge 4, you're going to do very, very well. This is the kind of tracker you can grow into. So even if you're not running ultra marathons today, even if you're just going to the gym a little bit, this is the kind of tracker you can grow into. So if you do start walking in the mountains or doing weightlifting or doing something you're not doing today, it's the kind of tracker that will give you the headroom to do that kind of thing. Just a tip, if you're the kind of person who's really gym bound and you just don't do things outside the gym, then you'll find that GPS has very little value for you, except that in some cases it can almost double the price of what you're paying for your tracker. So if you forfeit the GPS, you can get a really nice tracker for much, much less. I would strongly recommend the Huawei Band 6. The app for that is getting better and better, but you're always safe with a Fitbit.
Yeah, so it's 10% slimmer than the Charge 4, 200% brighter. It comes with 6 months of Fitbit Premium for free, which is becoming like an interesting thing because now they're integrating with...
They're trying to do the services thing. Everyone's
Yeah, they're integrating with Les Mills and they're integrating with Calm, which is one of those like mindfulness
They went
apps.
On and on about Calm and mindfulness. Gosh, so they brought up mindfulness like 30 times.
When you're doing the EDA scan, which is testing your electrodermal activity to like check your stress store, it will then launch a Calm session or a Calm session will launch an EDA
For those who don't know how this works, is they've now put metal panels into the tracker, into the watch, so that you can touch with your fingers and that's how they measure the electrodermal activity. But, you know, they have to put metal panels into the watch to be able to do that, to use them as sensors.
And Will Smith is their new brand ambassador.
No,
I saw
a really interesting shot of him. He's standing there with a huge paunch hanging out.
Yes.
And now he's signing up for Fitbit to get rid of his paunch. He wants to get into the best shape of his life.
And he will be developing exclusive content for Fitbit Premium.
And the little video clip they had of him was actually very funny. It was funny, Will Smith, but also with a serious I want to get into shape vibe. It was really cool, actually.
Yeah, I like it. It's interesting that they were kind of in the one end on the one end stating that they stole that they're part of Google and all of this blah 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 then on the other hand it was like
but when you know I was looking out for that because Lindsay and I are particularly keen on how the Fitbit and Google and Samsung deal is going to all come together. If those three things come together optimally, they could end up with a superb device, but they haven't done it. They've had over a year to do it and they haven't done it yet. So Fitbit is still coming out with no apparent Google influence whatsoever on the product that we can see. And Samsung is, Samsung is coming out and the only difference we can see is that it's still using Google's Wear OS. There's no beautiful love child being born out of these relationships, and that's a problem, I reckon. So as I was watching the whole Fitbit presentation, I was waiting for them to come out with something to give us hope, and they barely mentioned Google. They threw it in right at the end like a one-time mention.
Yeah, and so, they will be developing a Wear OS watch with Google, which is very interesting. But I think that's enough for
this
week.
Gosh, it's enough.
It's been absolutely awesome. Thatopinionguy.co.za is the website where you'll find all of my stuff. As soon as I get the Fitbit Charge 5 in for review, I will be putting it through its paces against... I've held back on the Sense review because there are more negative things that I've taken from that device than positive. So, and I've tried to not put too much negativity into the current
atmosphere. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Stop pretending to be level-headed and even-handed about
it. I'm trying to do things, Gavin. I'm a changed person. Gavin, what's up with you?
Nothing really. I was going to report about how my laptop bag got stolen, but I'm actually so sick of recounting the story. We'll deal with that some other time. But suffice to say, if you think you're insured for out and about, you need to have an itemized list of every single thing that you're carrying around with you, or else they will not help you. And that's where I've come to.
Even in like your household items things.
Yeah.
Just every month or so, just take
refresh
a video.
The list. Yeah. A video of all your valuables.
All your shit.
Yeah. Or take a couple of pictures or whatever matters to you.
Yeah, and like save that in like a very secure location.
Yeah.
In the cloud or wherever. And just, yeah, just have that documented thing that you can then just present to your insurance evaluators.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest problem that I'm having to overcome is having stuff that's way too good. Because I actually can't explain where I got all this gear, because most of it is gifts from tech companies. Ah. So every single item listed on my insurance claim is gift. It looks like I'm basically a fence for stolen goods. Okay, but that's all I have to add. We'll catch you next week.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.